Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Well, if there's ever been iconic music that you can't get out of your head, that's certainly one of the songs. Welcome to Behind the Curtain, everybody. I'm Paul Lisnick from WGN-TV, and that iconic classic television theme show song, of course, is, you got it, Leave It to Beaver. And I can't even hear that without saying the words, and Jerry Mathers as the Beaver. And I'm thrilled to say joining me for this show is Jerry Mathers, but as Jerry Mathers and not necessarily as the Beaver. Jerry, thanks for being with me.
Well, you know what? I don't mind being called the Beaver. It's something I'm very, very proud of, and it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, that just triggers. Are there people who just, for whatever reason, they do call you the Beaver or the Beeve or something, and that's just the way they refer to you? You're good with that?
You know, definitely. It's not, you know, it's something that I'm very, very proud to have done. It's one of the longest-running television shows in history. It's never been off the air since 1957, so it's something I'm very proud of. And, you know, they just see it. They see it on their TV, and I'm the Beaver, so it doesn't really matter to me. And they're always right. Very nice people.
I love it. Well, the toughest part of this interview, Jerry, is I wanted to try and ask you questions that you haven't been asked before. But you are so open with your fans and with media that trying to come up with questions you haven't been asked is really tough. But I'm going to try. Okay. So we'll do that.
And a little bit later, we won't have answers for those.
Well, that's okay. I may have the answers if you don't. I know what you think.
I learned a lot today.
And by the way, I know you and your wife, Teresa, follow the Leave It to Beaver fan site. So I went there and I gave the opportunity. I said, I'm going to be interviewing you. Were there any questions that people would love me to ask you? I thought that'd be a great opportunity. Well, I thought I might get a handful of questions. Big mistake on my part. Hundreds of questions later, I had to just whittle it down to a few. But we're going to...
A huge telephone bill.
Exactly. So, but I at least wanted to give your fans there a chance. But hey, but here's where I wanted to start. You can't talk to you without thinking Leave It to Beaver, but we should let people know that was not your first acting role. You actually started, and I'll put the commercial aside for Pet Milk aside, but actually it was the movies, Alfred Hitchcock and Bob Hope as a little kid. Did you really appreciate what you were doing at that point, who they were?
I started working as an actor on live TV at 2, and I was probably about 5 when I was, and I was still doing live TV. Alfred Hitchcock came on to promo a movie that he was just getting ready to do, and he saw me, and he hired me, and it was Shirley MacLaine and John Forsythe's first movie, and I'd done several before that, so I was just always very lucky, and, you know, there weren't a whole lot of kids that, you know, could do that kind of thing, because when you're working, especially on live TV, whatever the child does goes right out over the air. So once you did one show right and just, you know, kind of didn't mess anything up, I worked all the time. The sad part is there's really no record of those because it was live TV. It went out over the air, bam, it was gone.
But we do have a record of the movies you did, like The Trouble with Harry. And as I understand it, actually, you actually got the chance to sit on Alfred Hitchcock's lap. Didn't he scare you? I mean, this was the, you know, Psycho, all these scary films. Well, that was before then. But even so, was he like a really nice guy? Was he scary?
For me, he was really nice. You know, he'd call me over, and I knew that he was the director and the producer. And, you know, he'd say, Jerry, come here. And I'd go there, and he'd look at the script, and he'd go, you know, if I want to tell you how to say these lines. And he'd read them to me, and he would actually play my part, and basically I just had to mimic him, because unlike an adult actor, I couldn't read it, so I had to have somebody tell me what the lines were and what kind of reaction he wanted me to have for each line.
And you worked with Bob Hope in the Seven Little Foys, That Certain Feeling. Actually, over recent shows, I've had Bob's daughter, Linda, on, and you may also know Martha Bolton, one of his first female writer for all of that. But playing with Bob Hope, there you are. Even then, he was legendary. He was an icon. Did he steal the scenes, or did he let you have your day?
Well, basically, he stole some of the scenes because he saved my life. One of the shows that I did was at a theater, and he was supposed to be a vaudevillian actor, and I was his son, and I was kind of basically a little bratty, and so he sat me up in the off to the side of the stage while he was performing. And in those days, they used to have candles because they didn't have lights, and it was a true story that the curtains caught on fire. And so when they went to redo that, they put a little too much gasoline on the curtains. Now, they were supposed to. He was going to go out, do his little dance, and he says, no one runs out on me. Just go to the end, go to the doors and leave. Well, they put too much stuff on it, and it really started to burn. And I was up on a catwalk, which is above where the lights are, for the scene. And no one really realized that I couldn't get down because the ladder that they took me up on, they'd taken away. But he knew it because he just looked up and saw me. So he went and grabbed the ladder and actually saved my life.
Wow. Now, I did not know that story, so you owe a lot to Bob Hope.
The movie just knows the Seven Little Foys.
Right. And by the way, I will tell you, I'm sure you know, that was based on the fire at the Iroquois Theater, which was right here in Chicago. That's where it happened.
Absolutely.
And the show going on time was Bluebeard. That actually is performed here, or a show about it, every year. And I have to tell you, Jerry, I collect a lot of theater and movie props, and I actually have Eddie Foy Jr.'s actual shoes and trick hat from a show he did later, The Pajama Game. So, but anyway, what a great opportunity to work with Bob in that movie. So I'm sure you have great memories. Then comes Beaver, more or less. And am I right about this, that when it came time for your audition, you basically told the producers you'd rather be at Cub Scouts than auditioning?
Well, yeah, but it wasn't exactly like that. I had just joined the Cub Scouts, and it was my very first meeting, and my mom said, oh, Jerry, we've got a call back, and the interview had, I can't tell you how many hundreds of kids, because we didn't know it at the time, but they were looking for Beaver, Wally, Eddie, all the not adult actors. So there were these huge interviews, and you'd sit there. It was the summertime. It was very, very hot. And, you'd go in, and towards the end, they just started bringing me back, and then I'd stand there with different people. What I didn't realize, and my parents didn't either, was that what they were doing was looking for brothers and the Lumpy character, the Eddie character. We just thought, this is getting crazy. We're going back almost every day, and, they're not saying you've got the job. Well, I already didn't know that I had the job, and they were just looking for other characters.
And apparently they just found you charming and your sort of candor and all of that. When you created this role, when Beaver got created, it's a role that stayed with you. There's a lot of people who get, I guess stereotyped or tied to a certain role. Adam West is Batman and others. Some of them are very upset about it as the years go on, but others like yourself embrace it. Why embrace it? Why always know that? I mean, even though you've done so many other things, which we'll talk about, but you always have embraced that role. Is it just because it is the role that made you, and so why not?
Well, it is, but it's, obviously a very good show to even be connected with because it's the longest-running television show in history. It's never been off the air since 1957. It still plays today, not only in this country, but all over the world. I speak Japanese with a little girl's voice, which is kind of weird, or German, or all these different languages. I can go almost any place in the world, and of course they don't recognize me immediately, but a lot of people might come up to me and say, you look like somebody, you look like that little boy on that television show. But it's called in different places, not Leave It to Beaver. It's called, I think it's in Japan, it's The Happy Boy and His Family. There's just so many different things, and it's given me so many different opportunities to meet a lot of nice people that probably would walk right by me, except they recognize me. We have a talk. I meet somebody that's just really a lot of fun to talk to, and I move on.
That's so great. You actually were born in Iowa, of all places. Then your folks moved to California. But since you started it, too, was acting in your blood, or was it kind of in your mom's blood? And she sort of said, hey, let's let Jerry do this.
No, actually, my mom was from Minnesota, but she grew up from the time she was about 11 in Los Angeles. And my dad was from Iowa, but came to USC. He retired as a superintendent at LA City Schools, but he came as a coach from Iowa out here. And my mom was from here, and so she didn't really like the Iowa winters. And so when I was born in Sioux City, Iowa, but we moved out here when I was about 2.
And since I'm in the Beaver section of our time together, let me turn to the questions that many of your fans asked me to ask you, and I've selected some, and I know you've been asked some of these before, but hey, many people wanted to know, how close were you with Tony Dow and others off the set? Obviously, you had, you know, Ken Osmond, Eddie Haskell always giving you, you know, always calling you names and whatever, hey, Squirt and all that, but were you guys close off the set and become friends as opposed to the nature of those roles?
Really, we were friends, but, you know, like anything else, and this is true life, I was a lot younger than, say, Eddie Haskell, Frank Bank, who played Lumpy, Tony Dow. They were all basically teenagers, and I was, you know, just in the first grade. So it wasn't like we were bosom buddies. They'd go out, and the oldest of them was Ken Osmond, and he could drive. He was over 16, so his mom would give him the car, and they would go off to this very nice hamburger joint that was off the studio lot. Very once in a while, I was allowed, if I begged enough, and my mom would say yes to go with him, but they'd always say, you know, go, don't walk in with us because we don't want the girls to think that we're with you.
Love it. Now, that could have happened in Leave It to Beaver, right? Very same thing.
This is real life. But
right.
It was just fun. You know, they were really nice guys, and it was just a lot of fun and something that I, you know, will cherish all my life.
And I know you guys had a lot of fun on the set, the producers, directors, making sure, look, they knew they had kids there, right? And I know everybody had kids. So you had a lot of time, right, to kind of play around, throw a ball around with everybody while the sets were going on, because you also had pretty strict limits as a child in terms of the hours you could work.
Well, the hours were very, very strict because we could work 8 to 5 or 9 to 6, but we also had to get in 3 hours of school. So 3 hours of school plus lunch, that's 4 hours a day that we weren't available. So it was actually a lot harder on the adult actors because we'd go around and do all the scenes, and they'd do as much as they could with us, and then they'd have to come back later, and they'd have to reset all the lighting and everything to do their close-ups because they had to get as much as from us between those hours where they could. They didn't even get paid overtime, and they might be there till 10 or 11 at night sometimes just because of the switching from room to room.
Some of your fans asked me to ask you how or whether your acting changed as the series went on, as you matured, as you got older. Did you take a different approach to what you were doing, or was it the same from day one as the seasons went on?
You know, I think it was the same. I mean, I'd been an actor. I started on live TV at 2, so, you know, it was just somebody would hand you a script. You would learn the lines. The director would tell you where to go, you know, kind of what he wanted. Were you supposed to be happy? Were you supposed to be sad? And I had started on live TV, which was just, you know, when I was on film, if you made a mistake, they just cut and you redo it. And when I started, you always had to be perfect.
This is a question that came in from somebody who grew up in my hometown, so I actually got excited about asking this. Season 3, Jerry, episode 10. It was called Beaver's Fortune, premiered on December 5th, 1959, but there's an establishing shot. It's a photo that gets used in that show. The photo is of downtown Skokie, Illinois. And so people ask me to ask you, I grew up in Skokie, so I want to know too. Was Skokie in any way tied to anybody that you know of as a kind of a model for Mayfield?
Not that I know of, but the studio has a huge, basically, room where they have a lot of black and white and color photos, and when they need something, and also if a movie company has ever shot any place, if there are scenes that they didn't use or things like that, they put them in there and they're on the reel. So the only way I could tell you is there may have been a movie shot there sometime before 1957 or, you know, 57 to 63, and it was up in that room, and they were just looking for, you know, an establishing shot, and they just took it.
Well, next time you come to Chicago, I'll bring you to Skokie and show you where that scene was and bring back your memories. Some folks wanted to know how much of the show was done on the soundstage as opposed to getting to go on location.
Well, we never really went on location. We went, you might call it location, it was the back lot. Now, anything where the house is seen. Now, the house was a set, but the house, the front door was actually on the stage, too. But when I'm walking, like, to the car or we're walking along the sidewalk and things, those were all outside. Problem is, when you're outside, there's a lot of noise and honking cars and airplanes fly over, so they would rather do everything they can on the set. But a lot of it, maybe once every month or twice, we would go out on the back lot to do something. If there was a baseball scene and we were at the park and things like that, then we'd go out in the back lot. But we might only be out there for an hour or two, and then we'd go back to the stage.
More than anything else, I was amazed at how many people wanted to know whether you had a crush on Miss Landers. You talked about your education. Of course, she wasn't actually your teacher, but did you have a crush? And it made me think of shows like, you know, the show is so wholesome, as was, say, the Brady Bunch, but then, of course, the books come out years later of all the dating that went on between the Bradys and all of that. Any scoop you can give us on any of that?
Well, not really. I mean, she was a very, very nice person, but she was like what she played. She was a teacher, and, you know, sometimes she might tell me to, you know, turn my head a little bit more so I'd have a better close-up, or the long shot would be better, or if I was having trouble with the line, she would take me and we'd go off and we'd practice it together. But, you know, she was just a very, very nice person, and she wasn't there every week, and it was always a thrill when I heard she was going to come. She was a lot of fun to be around.
Somebody asked, and I'm was it ever not cool to be the Beaver? You know, as the years went on and we went through the turbulent 60s or the 70s, was it ever not cool being the Beaver?
Not for me. I mean, I had a wonderful time. It's something that, you know, basically set me up for life. I've met people all over the world and gotten to go all over the world because it plays all over the world. The funny part is you can watch me in Japan. I'm still the same face, have that girl's voice, and it's just fun to have people come up to you. Sometimes they don't even speak English, start talking to me, and they can't understand why I don't speak their language because they've seen me talking that way.
Of course, when your kids and your grandkids, so hard to believe, you know, Jerry Mathers is a grandfather, but you are. When they first saw the show, when they see you as a little kid and all of that, did they get a kick out of it? Did they understand it? Did they not connect with it? What was the reaction the first time your kids and grandkids said, you know, Grandpa, that's you, you're the Beaver?
You know, I think it's just more like watching movies. A lot of people have, you know, cameras that they can record themselves on vacation and things, and then they play them on a screen. Well, they're lucky enough to be able to watch me as a child, and, you know, I'm on there. They know I'm an actor, and, you know, they've come sometimes to the sets when they're older and I'm doing other things. So it's not like it's a big surprise that I'd be on there, and it's just something, you know, kids can do, adjust to a lot of things all their life. Their parents have said, oh, okay, you know, it's almost time for school, but you can watch an episode of Leave It to Beaver while I get your brothers or sisters ready or whatever. So it's something that they really enjoy, and they understand it's me as a child.
You know, some people wanted to know, and I do too, your thoughts about Burt Mustin. A lot of people thought he was an actor for a million years. I don't think Burt became an actor till he was in his 60s. He was an older guy when he first started, but was he? How nice was Burt Mustin? Gus the fireman.
He was just a really nice guy, I don't mean this in a mean way, but he was a gentle person. He was just so nice, very, very tactful, and just, you know, always had everybody else's interest besides his own. And, you know, if you were having trouble with a scene or something was wrong, he was the first one to jump in and say, well, if I change mine just a little bit, maybe that wouldn't be so hard or whatever. So, but he only became an actor. He was, I think, 60 years old before he became an actor. So he had done other things, and this was just something he'd always wanted to do. And in his retirement, this is what he considered fun on his retirement.
And he became just such a recognizable figure. Well, as the Beaver years waned, there's another part of Beaver that happened in your life. Your fans know about this, but there might be some folks listening who didn't know about it. So I'm going to bring back this memory by playing a little bit of a clip for you, Jerry. Here we go.
Happiness is having your feet on the ground, walking away, so you'll never be found. Messing your mind, the most important of all, be free.
Yes, you were a rock star. Tell me about Beaver and the Trappers.
Well, you know, I was doing at that time, I was just in high school, and I had a band, and we would play at Sock Hops, and a record producer had his kids there, and he was, I guess, a chaperone, heard it, and he decided that he wanted to do a record. And then I went around all over the country during the summers, and I'd do, you know, Sock Hops and all sorts of events, and it was just a lot of fun.
And you actually had some hits. I mean, Don't You Cry, Wind Up Toy, and so now I'm going to give eBay some business because we can people can actually find those recordings if they go to eBay and pick those up. They're still available. Do you wish, you know, did you want to become the Beatles? Was it a fun thing, or was it like, hey, this I could become a rock, Gary Lewis and the Playboys, we're next?
Well, you know, I didn't really strive to be that, but it was really fun. And, you know, I had a band, and the band, we would go around and play all the Sock Hops, and you'd get to meet all the girls at the girls' school. So I went to Notre Dame High School, which was an all-boys school. So, you know, we'd walk into places, and people would know us because we were Beaver and the Trappers. And it was just a lot of fun. And, you know, I played football, and I was on the track team, but I was mostly known for Beaver and the Trappers.
I love you for it. And of course you did. You took some time away from acting, went to UC Berkeley, got your bachelor's in philosophy. I know you were in a fraternity where you, I think you weren't the social chairman or something, right? Because everybody knew who you were, so you could go to all the sororities and invite everybody over.
That was it. I mean, you know, the guys, when I came in and I joined, a friend of mine was also there, and he was a couple of years ahead of me in it, but he was a very good friend of mine, and so he got me in. And so I suddenly became the chairman for all the parties because I could go over and, you know, people would know me, and I could go over to the knock on the sorority's doors and saying, you know, we're having a party, and they'd say, oh, yeah, of course we'll want to come.
You were also in the U.S. Air Force Reserves, and I know you've dealt with this before. SNL did a skit. There was this just terrible rumor that you had been killed at war. I know you know that Ken Osmond faced those rumors, that he had died. What is it that happens out there that creates these ridiculous rumors when you guys are alive, well, and healthy and happy?
Well, I think it's that a lot of people that were against the war were looking for ways to make it seem even worse than it was, and it was a very terrible thing. But, you know, I gave out an Emmy in 19, I guess it was 67, and I was in the service at the time and wore my uniform, so a lot of people saw me. I was in uniform, and then suddenly, maybe a week later or 2 weeks later, this thing came out that I had been killed in Vietnam. Maybe it was a person with a similar name or the same name or just something that somebody put out there. But, you know, at the time I wasn't working on a series, and I really didn't have a PR company that was, you know, watching everything I did and making sure that the magazines and news had it. So they just picked it up. And a lot of people thought that I had actually been a casualty of the Vietnam War.
Well, thank goodness you were not. You're alive and healthy and well, and I'm so happy to hear it. Tony Dow, I know, took from the set when things ended. You know, of course, today people collect props and all that. I know Tony took a shirt that he wore as Wally. Am I right that pretty much the only thing you have from the show is a boat that you created, and that all the various different creative departments helped you create? And I know it's small, but you still have that little boat.
I still have the boat. You know, that was the kind of thing that I was there Monday through Friday, and, you know, I was working from either 8 to 5 to 9 to 6, and I always knew my lines, so they wanted to have things that could happen to me while I was there, while I wasn't working on the set, that would keep me amused, so I want to keep coming back. So, yes, I did that, you know, and it was just a lot of fun. There was all those people on the set. One of the things they made sure, every one of the lighting people, the camera people, all the wardrobe, they were all family people. They all had kids, so they knew basically how to deal with kids. And it was just a really fun experience. It was some of the best 6 years of my life. Barbara Billingsley and Hugh Beaumont. Hugh Beaumont was a Methodist minister that had basically started as an actor just because he was in a very poor parish and they couldn't afford a minister. And then when he got Leave It to Beaver, he basically didn't have the time to do it, but he went back to that. Barbara Billingsley was this really nice model. Tony Dow was an AAU swimming and diving champ. And, you know, so everybody was just really nice. And I had a great time doing the show after 6 years. You know, I was just starting high school. I wanted to go to high school, but I wouldn't have minded if the show went on for quite a few more.
And of course, Barbara Billingsley made quite the new age image for herself when she appeared on Airplane. Did you love that scene when she was talking jive? And what a funny scene.
Yeah, you know, but it didn't shock me at all because she was like that. She was a great actress, but people see her as June and Ward, and they're, you know, so basically buttoned down and all, you know, very pristine. And she was just a lot of fun to be with, and we just had a wonderful time. You know, everything was just, you know, the show was a very happy show to work on. All the crew, they made sure that they all had families and kids especially so that they'd know how to deal with kids. And, you know, it was just a really fun place to be, and we had a good time not only when we were filming but also between scenes.
Beverly Cleary was a well-known children's author. She passed away just, I think, a couple of months ago. She wrote a series of Leave It to Beaver books. A lot of people didn't even know about those. I collect them. But did you have any interaction with Beverly Cleary, or was that just something she did, unconnected to you in the set?
Well, I didn't have a lot of connection to her. She did come out, and she came to the set and watched us film for a few days, I think twice. And so I met her, but I was honestly pretty busy. I was going to school, and then I was working at the same time. But, you know, when I finished with my schooling, if the other people were doing their close-ups or whatever, she'd come over and talk to us and, you know, just ask us about the show, you know, how we felt about things. I really didn't know at the time that she was an author, so I just thought she was a nice lady that somebody knew that was, and there were people like that all the time that came to the set just to see us work.
And I'm sure she was a very nice lady. But before I lose you, Jerry, I have a couple of maybe lightning round questions, so I know that I've asked you. First of all, you are part of the Hollywood Museum Squares. That's one of the reasons, of course, I to talk to you today. We'll talk about that when I post this interview. But that has been extended, by the way, so people will be able to see those through August 10th. It was going to end in July, but it won't. Did you have a good time revisiting the Hollywood Squares show, which you had done before?
Yeah, you know, it was really a lot of fun. It was a fundraiser to support the Hollywood Museum. And, you know, it's so much fun because it's such a good cause. All the old television shows and all the things and memorabilia that they have there, and people can go and say, oh, I remember that show. I remember that. Well, there's Leave It to Beaver. So they're really good people, and it's a fun thing to go and see things that you've seen on TV in real life and the movies also.
What did they? I know they had a Hollywood Children's at the Museum of Children's display, and Stan Livingston, friend of yours, I'm sure, who I know, actually sent me his house slippers he wore as Chip, so I have his house slippers. What from Leave It to Beaver was in that exhibit?
You know, I'm not really sure. They have whatever they have. I honestly didn't go to it, so. I don't know.
Okay, well, fair enough. Also, you spent time on Broadway as Wilbur Turnblad in Hairspray. What a great turn. Did you like that notion of the connection? You know, people who do theater say, give me that audience live every night and the risk that comes with live theater, or are you more comfortable behind or in front of the camera?
You know, I'm both comfortable in both. I've done live TV from the time I was 2 years old, so being in front of an audience is something that I just grew up with, and, you know, at the time I didn't realize that it was scary at all. You know, the director would come out, and we'd rehearse for a couple of days, and there'd be a few people in the audience, and all of a sudden you went to do the show, and, you know, that was the one you had to do it exactly right. When I was doing Leave It to Beaver, that was on film, so if you made a mistake, you could always go back and redo it. But I was the type of person that I was used to having to do it right every time. So honestly, I had very, very few things that we ever had to go back and redo because I forgot a line or said it differently or something.
Now, of course, there was the top hit, Still the Beaver, made for a TV movie, a television movie. There was the new Leave It to Beaver. We're going to have to talk some other time to talk about that. But once some of your fans did want to know, will we ever get Leave It to Grandfather Beaver? You coming back?
Well, I wouldn't mind doing it, but I wouldn't count on it. You know, it's a great show, but you don't want to, you know, put too much on it. The show stands up today. People still like to watch the old one and, you know, the new Leave It to Beaver. So, you know, I know it's a great show, and I'm very proud of it. If they asked me, I wouldn't fight them, but I don't hear them breaking down the door.
I promised you, Jerry, if I asked you a question you couldn't answer, I would give you your answer. So here's that question. I know I'm a candy nut, a junk food nut. I know you are. What's your favorite candy? Because if you don't know it, I do.
Black licorice. It's very easy.
Yes.
And the reason is I never had it until I was working with Bob Hope on a movie and the Seven Little Foys. And this man gave me this, they wanted me to have some kind of candy, and the prop man gave me black licorice. This was way before Leaving to Beaver. I tasted it, loved it, and it's been my favorite candy. And it was one of the first candies I ever ate. It's been my favorite candy all my life.
And have you ever had Australian black licorice?
Yes, I have. And it is very good, too, but I still prefer, I think, the American.
Just the good old Twizzlers, huh?
Yep.
Okay, fair enough. What an incredible career. I could talk to you for hours, and I hope I get to do that again one day. I want to remind people to listen to the Hollywood Museum Squares. I'll put the contact information for that. It's through August 10th that those benefits are available. They're only 10 bucks a show, five different shows with some great stars. A couple of weeks ago, I had Bruce Valanche and John Davidson, Lonnie Anderson talking about that as well. And Jerry, I know you make personal appearances. I know that's starting up again because I've seen you post about that. People can follow you on Facebook, but you do have merchandise. You sign things. There's pictures. There's hats, baseball. So what is the website so people can just check you out and talk to you and get some of the stuff from you?
Well, the website is jerrymathersbeavermerch.com, and they can go to it, and they'll see all the merchandise that we have and also the appearances because I go all over the country now, and some of them are with Tony Dow, some of them aren't, but it's just a really nice way to meet the fans and sign a lot of autographs, and we have a really good time.
And of course, everybody always wants to know, I know you're in touch with Tony because you see him, but the other surviving cast members, you know, some of the folks who are your friends, are you in touch with them as well?
Well, yes, but you know, it's like anything else. It's maybe like the people you went to either elementary school with or high school with. I don't see them all that often. It's not that they're not my friends. It's just that we all live in the Los Angeles and different areas of around here. So we're all good friends, and I'm always happy to see them, but I don't see them as much as I'd really like to just because we're all so busy.
Well, I just hope that Chicago gets back on your schedule soon. Again, we'll check out your website and find out when you're going to travel, and we hope to have you here too because it's such a treat when you guys come around. You are you and Tony. It's just wonderful. Jerry Mathers, thank you for being the Beaver. Thank you for being a part of everybody's life all these years. I've been a huge fan of yours. I was so excited to get to talk to you, and I hope I get to talk to you again and give you some pizza when you get to Chicago.
Sounds good. I'll be waiting.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.